Blog Talk Radio.
That's a crying shame. You just blame me to me, woman. And that's a crying shame. Since you've gone away and left me, honey, I've been crying with the pain. Oh, I do most anything to feel your love just once again. Oh, I do most anything. But that day it never comes, babe. That's why I'm crying with the pain. And you treat love just like a king. You're just like a little child, babe. And you treat love just like a long game. But you never really loved me, honey. That's why I'm crying with the pain. Yeah, I'm crying with the pain. Well, every night and every day.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That was Crying Shame by the Teskey Brothers. This is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, with my co-host, the one and only Ian Bush, and our guest, Christopher Plain, the music god. And I played that song specifically for a reason, and Chris will know why. Welcome, Chris. Glad to have you with us tonight.
Yeah, you had to hit me with that right out of the gate, didn't you?
Well, not for the reason you think, but because you're the reason that the Teskey Brothers came. I played their music a lot because they are just absolutely fantastic. And I don't know how much you have listened to the Teskey Brothers, but when they first came out, Chris sent me a video of these guys, and they are out of Australia. And if I was not looking at the video, I would swear up and down they were on Bourbon Street in New Orleans because they can sing the blues just like the old blues singers.
Well, that's what I told you.
Oh, that's why Chris is the music guy, because he knows where the talent, where the talent's hidden,
that's
you know?
Exactly.
That's what I told you, because when I first heard that song, that was my first instinct was, these guys are from Beale Street or the Mississippi Delta, somewhere down around there, you know. And when I looked them up and seen they were from the Outback in Australia, Mac, I was like, man, there's no way that four white boys from the Outback are, like, just putting us to shame over here. And I had to send it to you, man. It was like, you know, it's just one of them you got to see it to believe it type of band,
well,
you know.
Well, I thought I was listening to Roy Orbison or to even Elvis
Righteous
in
Brothers.
His early, the Righteous Brothers, mm-hmm. even Elvis in his
El
early
Green.
Years. Because mm-hmm. they are so smooth.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. don't sound Australian, not one bit. I mean, they like,
no.
There's no way in hell anyone can tell me the first time hearing them that your brain goes, oh, they're from Australia. You know, it's no way. There's just, you know. So it was
you
one
know,
of them cool surprises.
When, sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead,
you.
Go
when,
ahead.
Yesterday
You're
when
good.
We were, when Yvonne and I were talking, that was actually something that I brought up that I really admired about you, that you don't just listen to the music on face value. I mean, you dig into it. It's almost like a research project for you. You find out where they're from, their upbringing, you know, how they came about as a band, what their reasoning was for the music. So, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I kind of want to ask, what brought you to this passion of yours? What made you want to dig deeper than just on the surface value? Because, you know, in the age of technology, we still don't utilize technology as much as we should. You know, it's amazing how many people I have to tell, hey, if you want to find the answer, maybe you should Google it. Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
What made you turn into the music guy?
It's kind of a funny story, but it's kind of a simple story, man. My dad's been a truck driver for 51 years. This is 51 years this year for him. And my mom and him got divorced when I was two. He got custody, and we basically lived in his Peterbilt on the road, just going from place to place as you know, over-the-road drivers. You know, this was the early 70s, so this was before laptops, cell phones, any of that kind of technology. So I had books and I had music to entertain
myself.
Wasn't
there something called an encyclopedia or something like that? I don't know. I'm too young to know all that. There was.
I mean, there was, but I didn't have those. You know, what I had, and Yvonne will remember this, is, you know, back in the day, records, cassette tapes, even some 8-tracks, they had all the information that
they
you
did.
Wanted about the record. You know, where it was recorded, who recorded it, when it was recorded. They had the lyrics. They had, you know, old records, LPs. The artwork was a story into itself. You know, if you look at a Pink Floyd, a vinyl record, or an old Jethro Tull, there were things in that artwork that went far beyond just the music itself. So
you just gave me goosebumps, because I got the Stormwatch vinyl staring me in the face with them binoculars with the lightning in the distance, just as you said, Jethro Tull. And I know exactly where you're getting at.
Yeah, like I would spend hours in that truck with nothing to do other than read the liner notes of those old records and things. That's why I can tell you Nine Lives by Bob Seger was recorded on April 26, 1978. It was recorded in Ypsilanti, Michigan at Sonic Boom Studios. It was recorded by Bob Barlett and Steve Chavasi. All this stupid, useless information that, you know, nobody should even remember. And the name kind of come from a teacher. Once I did start school, I think I was about fifth or sixth grade, and one of the teachers made a comment about a Steve Miller record, and I told her she was wrong. That is not she mentioned one of the songs. I think it was Jungle Love, if I remember correctly, and she saw a story about it, and I was like, you're wrong. That's not what it was about. And she goes, oh, no, you're wrong. So I next day I brought the paper to prove her wrong. And she said, well, aren't you just a little music god? And it stuck with me. That's what all my friends called me after that. Because I was, when I went to California to live with my mom for the first time, was right around the time that hair metal kind of broke. And it was a whole new world. A kid who grew up on country and southern rock and trucker music was suddenly introduced to Quiet Riot and Grim Reaper and Shark Island and early Motley Crue and all these bands that were getting ready to explode onto the scene. And I would sit in front of the stereo with cassette tapes like we did back in the day, and you'd wait for that perfect moment and bam, you'd record. Then you'd have to, that perfect moment where you had to stop it, you know, for the DJ come back on. And after about 3 or 4 months, I left California to come back to Michigan with a giant rolling suitcase that didn't have a stitch of clothing in it. It was filled with cassettes that I had recorded of all of these bands that nobody in Michigan had heard yet, because hair metal or the Sunset Strip had not made its way to the Midwest yet. And I introduced all my friends back home to Quiet Riot, to Def Leppard, to, you know, Metal Health and Shout at the Devil. And I caused this massive uproar in town because I was this kid who was introducing all the kids to this satanic music, all this evil, hard music that they had never been exposed to. You know, most of them grew up listening. I mean, brothers and sisters, you know, they had Bob Seger, they had Nugent and Journey and that kind of stuff. But they didn't have the heavy stuff yet. And, you know, I brought back AC/DC and Judas Priest and all of these bands, and it kind of snowballed from there. So I, to this day, I'm still kind of a legend where I grew up that, you know, I was the one who corrupted most of the people my age. So
it was just a matter of time before they got corrupted anyway.
Well, right. But, you know, I mean, a lot of them, when I come back, I kind of, there's this funny story that they would tell. And one of the things my school used to do is twice a year, they used to have this talent show type of thing. And essentially, everybody would lip sync to their favorite song. And that particular year that I come back, after 314 renditions of Billie Jean, Thriller, and Purple Rain by Prince, everybody in the audience were basically yawning, except me, Mike, Pete, and Billy Strong decided we were going to do Metal Health by Quiet Riot. So the music kicked on, and everybody was just kind of shocked because they were so used to Top 40, they didn't know what the hell was going on, and we had the wigs.
Well, yeah, they were loved by Purple Rain for how long? You finally broke them out of that,
you know,
trance.
But, yeah, so we had, you know, we had Woodshop, we had made, like, little, they weren't fake guitars, but they weren't, like, real guitars either. I mean, they were shaped like real guitars, but they didn't have the stuff in it to actually use as real guitars. But we had created our own little instruments and chop class, and we had the wigs and the spandex, and we went full on, you know, and people loved it, you know, and after that, it was like, hell yeah, you know, it was just full on rock and roll, and, you know, I never stopped liking Blackfoot or Hank Sr. or Farron Young or any of the stuff I grew up on. It was just one more avenue, you know, and then from there, you know, I got into punk, I got into hip hop, I got into reggae, I got into blues, and now I've got like 1.4 million songs on my hard drive, on my computer hard drives. you know, so again, it's a
ladies and gentlemen, he has probably more songs than all of the radio stations in the entire world.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I mean, any one individual radio station, I'll guarantee you, I would blow away. Like I created radio shows for stations, college stations, and stuff like that, and never gotten credit for them.
You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you're just pumping out work lately, man. I'm really impressed. You have another radio show going on now, right? Or was that a little bit in the past?
I have one current podcast. I kind of got out of live radio. Live radio is it's fun, but kind of an ungrateful thing. Not a lot of people listen in live, and you know, it's a time-consuming thing. And when you're creating playlists and creating interviews and creating content, and it's a full-time job that you don't get paid for. And unfortunately, you know, my kids demand to eat. So, you know, I kind of had to, I didn't have to, but I transitioned to podcasting because podcasting is hot. There's a lot of people that want to work with you as far as affiliate marketing and sponsorships and things like that. And, you know, I got into it just to see how it went. And after about 6 days, I had more listeners on the podcast than I'd had in about the past 8 months of my live shows. So I thought, you know, maybe I made the right choice. So I have the first podcast called The Noise Report that is current. It's kind of on hiatus right now because of all the personal turmoil in my life. But once I'm back to full force, I have that. And then I have a second one that is ready to debut that isn't really going to be as music-oriented. It's going to be more fun. But it's still going to include music, but it's going to, it's going to be called the Ish List. And, it's just going to be top 10 lists of very random stuff, you know, and, mm-hmm. We have all kinds of guests come on and we're going to talk about their top 10s of whatever I throw at them. So, you know, it could be top 10 slasher films. It could be, you know, top 10 80s sex rock movies. It could be top 10 guitar players of all time. Could be top 10 worst Christmas gifts you could give somebody. You know, it's just going to depend on who the person is coming on. And we're going to laugh. We're going to have fun with it. And the comedic side of me will come out much more than in the music stuff. So.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because Yvonne and I were talking about how, you know, even going through adversity, and I don't really want you to share what that is unless you feel comfortable, but I know for me personally, lately I've been going through a lot of adversity, and it was just the right time, right place that, you know, the chain was coming back, and Yvonne said, hey, dust off that phone, time to go live again, and I didn't know if I was ready for it, but I tell you what, man, I mean, everything happens for a reason, and I'm glad that you're using your adversity for something positive instead of something negative, because I see too many people who get swallowed up by their circumstances, and you got to have people around you, brother, that build you up and,
you know,
tell you to dust off that microphone, and that's why I'm really glad that all three of us are on this show tonight, because we've all been through a little bit of hell and back, and they threw us in the wolf pit, but we came out wearing that wolf pelt cloak, you know? So you're going to do it, man. You're going to kill it.
At the end of the day, man, kind of knew the divorce was coming. It's really, I tried to keep it low key just because I don't want to get, I don't like, how do I put this nicely? I don't let people in on all my personal life. But you know, it's marriage. Things happen and people grow apart, and after 12 years, we had hit a point where, look, we were either going to get marriage counseling, and this is going to work, or we were going to implode. And she refused pretty much outright to get any kind of counseling or the help she needed. And me, I'm a tough old dude. Like, I'm 50 years old. I've lived in 47 states. I've lived in 16 countries. I've been in the military. I'm the son of a truck driver. I grew up on a farm. I've been through foster care. I've been through the military. You know, I mean, I mentally, I've been through a lot of stuff that has tempered me for this. And really, at the end of the day right now, the only thing that matters to me is my son. So, and I told her, you know, when this started going down, like, look, if you want a divorce, I'll give you a divorce. I don't care about that. You have everything in the house. It's material stuff. I can replace it all. But you're not going to drag, you're not going to drag our child through this, you know, gauntlet of stuff that you're trying to do. I mean, what she wanted, she wanted to essentially, well, I'm going to get a storage unit, and over the next couple weeks, I will move our stuff out and find a new place to go while still living here. And I was like, it don't work that way. If you want out, go. You're not going to watch your child suffer as you disappear a little piece at a time every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, you're not doing that to him. And I outright refused, and it blew up. And then she made this batshit crazy allegation, which nobody believed, you know, because anybody who knows me knows I'm a lot of things, but I'm not that. And, you know, nothing has come of it. And now she realizes, now she's starting to stalk my social media because I think she's realizing I screwed up, you know. And now I'm suffering the consequences of it. And she wants to backpedal, but she doesn't know how, because she made this, you know, serious allegation. And by backpedaling, she realizes that, oops, I made a false felony allegation. And if I try to go now and say I lied, she's going to get arrested, you know. And she painted herself into a corner. When I left, when I got forced out of the house, I took all the air conditioners. I turned the internet off. You know, and people, well, you're being petty. Well, no, look, this is my house. You forced me out of my house on a false allegation and a PPO. If you think you're going to live in my house with all the luxuries of that house, you're wrong. So, she's sitting in a big house with no internet and probably 90-degree weather, you know, and she's probably sweltering, bored out of her mind, and, hey, tough luck. That's, you know, those are the breaks. So I'm not mad about it, bro. I'm really not. I'm not mad. I don't want revenge. I just want her out of my house so I can have my house back and I can have my studio back. I can get back to doing what I do, you know?
That brings me back full circle to something else that Ian and I were talking about last night. I don't know if he told you this or not, but the first night that he co-hosted with me and you were on and you were talking about all of the wisdom that you have in the music world, he was going, now he's just throwing this stuff out here. Well, when he went and did his research, he went, oops, he wasn't just throwing this stuff out here. He knows this stuff.
No, I don't just throw it out there. Trust me. I got opinions. Like, one of the opinions that I could catch the most shit over, I do not like Eminem. You've probably seen it. And witnessed
yes,
it.
Yes, on many occasions.
I am not an Eminem disciple. I never have been. I never will be. I know the guy personally. He is a product of being in the right place at the right time and the right person hearing him. I worked in a record store when he first started. We couldn't give his records away. He would come in when he first did Infinite, which was his first record. We put those stupid things on the shelf, and they sat there. we couldn't give those stupid things away. Well, then, you know, well, Mr. Battle Rap does this thing, and Dr. Dre hears it, and he blows up, and whatever. Like, I'm not a fan. So I have my opinions. That doesn't make me right or wrong. But at the end of the day, you know, if I say, you know, if I give you a date on something, 99.5% of the time I'm going to be either dead on or I'm going to be within a few days. You know, I might say April 24th and it was April 27th. But I'll remember it's April and I'll remember what year it is. I don't know. Music has saved my life in so many ways. At my darkest, at my lowest points in life, that's what I've had, you know. So when I was in the military and just getting, I mean, you understand being in the military. When you're going through basic training and you're just getting that beat down, it's those songs in your head, you know, those old Bob Seger songs or those old, you know, whatever songs, those old Conway Twitty songs that you hum them in your head and you kind of kill that noise just a little bit, you know.
So let me ask you this, Chris. What was the new music that you popped up on your page today?
You know, I don't even remember, to be honest. I've been so busy today. I'm trying to think. What the hell did I post?
Wait a minute, I'll pull it up. You got three.
You can, ladies and gentlemen, this is Yvonne doing what she does best.
Exactly.
She is a hunter. Do not underestimate.
I've been running all day, so I don't even remember what I posted, to be honest.
It is The Pride.
The who?
The Pride. The Infinite Staircase.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, that was is my friend Lenny, Leonard Savozzi, the one who replied to it. That was his band a while back, him and his brother. He had a band called The Infinite Staircase, and there was a single called The Pride. And about a year, 8 months to a year after that, his mother was diagnosed with ALS.
Mm.
And he had to take about a year and 9 months off his mother to take care of his mother through it all, and she eventually passed. And he has a new band now called Lenny. It was just L-E-N-N-E. It's pronounced Lenny, but yeah, there wasn't any. He has a new band, and they're getting back to what they're doing. It's essentially most of the same guys from Infinite Staircase. And really great band. If you like Seven Dust or Candlebox, any of that kind of stuff, then you're going to love him. He's a super nice guy. It was weird. I interviewed him. If you go to my current podcast, the interview is there. And after interviewing him on the new project, it kind of popped up, and I was like, okay, that's funny that popped up very shortly after I interviewed you. So
you do know that the NSA watches us all, so Big Brother's always out there.
That's okay. I don't care.
So let me ask you this. Since you know this young man who's getting his self back together, would he come on this show?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Lenny's a super nice guy. Guy.
You need to hook us up so I can get him on this show.
Absolutely. It's not a problem at all. Yeah. Lenny, you know, he's a super nice guy, very down to earth, and works with quite a few. He works with Morgan Rose, the drummer for Seven Dust, is on the new project. Kevin Martin from Candlebox is on a new project. One of the guitar players from Black Label Society with Zach Wild is also on his new project. So, you know, he's not famous yet, but he's got a lot of famous guys that are sort of pushing
but
him.
But he will be. We were talking about this last night. All of the You remember the music artist that I sent to you from Michael Stover. And when they were on the show, I told him, I said, you all are going to be up in the top 100 one of these days. Just sit back and wait. Well, without doubt, Richard Lynch and Matt Weston and Jimmy Lee Thurston, they all are out there in the top 100 and winning awards. And I told Ian last night, I firmly believe that between our two shows, mine and yours, that we kind of help them on their way, because we're heard all over the world, and you don't get that kind of exposure on regular radio.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny about Jamie Lee Thurston that I've been a fan of his for when I sent you that Off the Chain song.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. Like, that was his, I think, like, third or fourth record. I've been a fan of Jamie since his first record. So when he pumped that record out, I was like, oh, Jamie's got a new record, you know, and let me check it out. And as I'm going through the songs, that song come on, and I laughed because I was like, oh, man, got to send this to Yvonne. This is just too great of, you know, and it, not that it was not just that he wrote a song with that title, but if you listen to the words, it really does just fit you so perfectly well. Like, it was almost like he knew you when he wrote it.
Maybe
he's
does.
Such a nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy that, you know, yeah. So.
And he interviews so well.
You know, he's from Vermont originally, so that was the other thing that I thought was funny is, you don't really hear of country stars from Vermont that often.
No,
so,
you don't.
You know, so.
That would
country,
be more
maybe.
Bing Crosby or a Frank Sinatra group.
Yeah, so Matt is another one that, you know, we've both interviewed, and Matt is a phenomenal, phenomenal musician, and unfortunately, you know, he lost his father. And
yes, he did.
Kind of, you know, there's, I guess there's that adversity of losing a parent. I've never had to deal with it, so I don't know, but, you know, I know these guys have taken that pain and turned it into really incredible art as far as music. So,
well, and
God bless
the three. The three of us have talked before. Songs are really just stories to music, right, Ian?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely.
And when the three of us as writers and as music aficionados understand that when a moment happens in one's life, whether it's one of happiness, indifference, pain, sorrow, grief, whatever, that sometimes we have to take our art and our craft and put those feelings down in order to deal with them.
Yeah. I mean, some of the greatest songs ever have been based on a record I've been listening to a lot the past week. Everybody knows Rick Springfield,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jesse's Girl and all of these amazing songs. Here about 10 years ago or so, maybe a little longer, but this record called, I think it's called Anger, Denial, Guilt, Hatred, something along that line. He went through this horrific divorce, and he channeled all of these, you know, really evil feelings he had towards his ex, who did a real number. And when the record came out, everybody was like, oh, it's a new Rick Springfield record. Well, what we as fans weren't expecting is this record was really super heavy and super dark for Rick. Like, it was, you know, there was a lot of venom, a lot of anger in this record that you don't expect from a Rick Springfield. And, you know, it's one of them records that I didn't know Rick Springfield had it in him to write a song that was so heavy and so dark and so angry, you know. And it's an amazing record, one of my favorites by him. But again, you know, it's not one you're going to hear every single time from him. So it was just, I've been listening to that lately because I could really, really relate to it right now. You know, Blue October is another one that I've been listening to a lot because, you know, Justin is such a brilliant songwriter. I mean, if you've never listened to Blue October, Justin, the lead singer, has gone from where he started, being a bipolar, drug-addicted, horrible husband who got so low during his first divorce that he had a mental breakdown in the Minneapolis airport. And his parents had to fly from Houston to get him, essentially, to where he is now drug-free for a number of years, alcohol-free, on his medicine, and is the happiest, most joyful being you will ever hear. And he's doing songs now, like the song Home. And it'll bring tears to your eyes that if you don't believe a person can absolutely transform themselves, look up Justin Furstenfeld of Blue October. That's all I got to say. The guy is, he's an absolute inspiration, you know. So that's why I wear their logo as a tattoo on my hand. Because when I get to that point, when I get to that low point, I can look at that tattoo and I know that's my, you know, that's my sign to step back and reevaluate and rethink where I'm at.
And Ian, wouldn't you agree, Ian, that there's times in all of our lives when we've been at that point where we wonder, why am I even here anymore?
You know, I was actually going to bring that up. That
oh, get out of my
powerful
head.
No, right. That's why I'm your co-host. I have to be there. Duh.
Well, then it's crowded.
It is. There's a lot of voices, Yvonne. We need to talk about this. You know, the powerful thing about music for me is that I can listen to a song or an album, and without any other people knowing what's happening to me, transform into the person and the thing and the experiences I was experiencing when I heard that album.
Right.
And I think both of you can agree with that. I know when I was growing up, one of my favorite, you know, we already talked about Jethro Tull, so I'm not going to bring that one up again, but Pink Floyd, The Wall. I remember when I was growing up, just that very strong, they're mad, they want to change the world, they want things to be different, you know. How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat, you know, like that stuff.
Right.
It was so crazy to hear.
Yeah.
But that gets me right back into high school where I'm all like, yeah, like, you know, there are things that I went through in my young adulthood and whatnot. But what got me through was listening to The Wall and how, you know, you need to tear down the wall. And sometimes you need to build it back up. And, you know, sometimes you have nothing. Sometimes you have everything.
Right.
You know, even to this day, my dad and I laugh at each other because our favorite thing to do is, you know, like, I got a little black book with my poems in it. And we just go through, like, with just word, you know, Dad, all I got today is a bag, a toothbrush, and a comb.
Right.
That shoots me back right to high school when I'm listening to these songs and, you know, I'm having all these emotions and feelings and just trying to make it one more day, you know. And I think everybody has that one album that is kind of their album they lean on. And so I guess using my experience, what's the album that you lean on the most in life, which is hard because you have over, you know, 1.5 million songs. So that's 24, carry the two, what, couple million albums?
You know, I have a couple. I'm still in the Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd is my favorite band of all time. Again, pretty well documented. I think anybody who's ever looked at my page for more than a few minutes knows. from my previous station being called Final Cut Radio to my email, one of my emails being Floydian Dreams. I'm a massive Pink Floyd fan. Where a lot of people lean towards The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon, The Final Cut is a record that I really kind of connect to. And there's something about that record that, you know, it's a continuation of The Wall, essentially. A lot of people don't know that The Final Cut are really a lot of songs and ideas that didn't quite make it on The Wall. But it's kind of a continuation of that storyline. But it's not quite as desperate. It's not quite as dark. It's that period of I've gone through the darkest part and I've come out the other side. So now I'm starting to see the dawn a little bit. That is one record that has always stuck with me. Another one, mainly for one song, there is an artist named Michael Monroe, who is the former lead singer of Hanoi Rocks. Most people know Hanoi Rocks because it was the drummer of that band that Vince Neil killed in the car crash. On Michael's first solo record, the second I heard the first single, which is called Dead Jail or Rock and Roll, I knew immediately. It was like lightning struck. This was my song. This was my life story. You know, when I was a kid, all I wanted to be was the meanest man on the meanest machine, you know, headed the wrong way on a one-way street, never fit this society, you know. And all my life, people told me I had three choices, dead, jail, or rock and roll, dead, jail, or rock and roll. And that has literally been my life. I knew at 12 years old that I was either going to play rock and roll, I was going to be dead, or I was going to go to jail. Now, I've been in jail, and I've played rock and roll, so I'm just waiting for the final cut, I guess. But song-wise, Dead Jail or Rock and Roll. Record-wise, Final Cut is one. The first Mother Love or the Mother Love Bone record that came out before Andrew died. Very, very personal to me. The other one that has always been this weird record that most people laugh at me about, but the second Air Supply record. I love Air Supply, man. And, you know, there's something about what those guys did that was just, it's still kind of untouched in music.
That's true. You know, that is very true.
Yeah, when you listen to Air Supply, you know, Making Love Out of Nothing at All, Even the Nights Are Better, All Out of Love. Yes, it's cheesy pop, you know, music, AOR music, whatever you want to call it, you know, middle of the road, adult contemporary, whatever the term they use. But, man, those are classic, timeless songs. Those are songs that let me put it another way. Going back to Rick Springfield, including Huey Lewis, and then Air Supply, I challenge anyone, take any of those three bands, those three people, look up their greatest hits and then play it and tell me how many songs you do not know off of their greatest hits. I'll let you know right now, you are going to know almost every single song without realizing you know almost every single song.
Because they're all iconic and they're all classic.
Yeah, because we grew up with them without realizing we grew up with them.
Right.
When I listen to Huey Lewis, I seen Huey Lewis live probably about 8 years ago. And when I was sitting there during his show, singing these songs word for word, I didn't even realize that I knew that many Huey Lewis songs. I'm over
and
here
I
thinking,
remember,
okay, I know.
I remember when it was Huey Lewis in the news.
Well, and it's still it. It's still it. But when I seen them, I'm over here thinking to myself, okay, I know Heart of Rock and Roll, I Need a New Drug, and The Power of Love. And then during the show, as they're going through their set list, I know every stinking song. And I was like, how the hell do I know 30-plus Huey Lewis songs? But I'm standing there, and I'm singing them. I haven't heard them in decades. But I'm singing right along to them, you know. Rick Springfield, another one. Go through Rick Springfield's Greatest Hits. You will know every single damn song on that record and not even realize that you still know this song 25, 30 years later. Air Supply is another one.
And the thing is,
I can listen to Air Supply.
The thing is, Ian, if you pay attention to commercials, those three artists use their songs in the commercials. You don't recognize it unless you grew up on it.
Right. I've noticed that with some commercials of my generation, too. My you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers and even some of the 80s and 70s music. They were playing the, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the Turtles, So Happy Together. You know, So Happy Together. Yeah. And I was like, what? Like, that's not made for a commercial. That's from a band. Yvonne, what's your go-to? What connection do you feel with an album or a band
Bob
or a song?
Bob Seger is always my go-to.
Man, you get along with my dad then.
Well, the reason is when you listen to his songs, they not only tell a story, but they tell a backstory.
Yep.
He's another one. Yeah, the one where he talks about one more night. Just give me one more. I just got one more night to be on this stage. Just one more night, and then he goes down the road and he says, "Just one more night." But his backstory comes out in every one of his songs.
Yeah. And he's another one to join those three. Listen to Bob Seger's Greatest Hits. Again, you will know. Way more songs than you realize you know. And
the funny thing is they think that, like, for example, for Bob Seger, Turn the Page, Metallica made that. No, Metallica did that.
That was a Bob Seger, because that is one that is so iconic, because with Turn the Page, he's literally saying, okay, every day I turn a page and start a new chapter in my life. I don't live in yesterday. I just turn the page.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, and you know, there's a weird story to that song. You know, Alto Reed played the saxophone on that song. Now, Alto had been a member of his band for many, many years before that. But you know, that's the first song that they really extensively used the saxophone on. Like, that was the first one I would have ever had a solo on. And
well, that saxophone made that song. But that saxophone.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that sax was smooth as chocolate, man. I mean, it was shrill, but then it got you to a crescendo, and then it mellowed you out right at the end, right into hear Bob Seger keep going with his story.
Yeah.
Like, it was the beautiful contrast between that saxophone and his voice.
Yeah, and it wasn't supposed to be there. It was actually Jackson Browne. Yes, that was not, up until that point, they had never had Alto really be a major part. He was just kind of there to accentuate certain parts of songs. And if you go back into Bob Seger's thing, and Seger is probably the artist I know more than anything about. This is my dad's favorite artist. I listen to this man front to back so many damn times as a kid. I literally just got sick of hearing Bob Seger, which is why earlier I said I could tell you that Bob Seger 9 Knots was recorded on April 27th, 1974, blah, 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 blah. Alto was not supposed to have a saxophone solo on that song. Jackson Browne helped write that song. And Jackson Browne is the one who said, you know, if you add this right here, the song is going to be a smash. And Bob said, well, nobody uses a saxophone solo. Which is, and Jackson Browne said, well, this is all the more reason you should do it.
And it's so iconic because it's
Jackson Browne was absolutely right. So,
it grabs
you.
That saxophone grabs you in that song, just like Ian said. It makes you sit up and take notice because all of a sudden he's telling this story and it's like an explanation point at the end of the sentence. Pay attention.
Jackson Browne is another artist who people don't give credit to. There are so many Eagle songs that are iconic because of Jackson Browne's contribution that he never gets proper credit for. You know, a lot of people don't. Oh, Jackson Browne helped write, and Glenn Frey wrote Take It Easy. You know, Standing on a Corner in Winslow, Arizona. Yeah, everybody knows that. But what they don't know is Tequila Sunrise.
He wrote that one,
the
too.
The Dalton Gang, Take It to the Limit. All of these songs that Jackson Browne had a hand in writing because he was roommates with Glenn Frey and Dan Fogelberg. And a lot of the songs that Fogelberg was famous for, a lot of the songs that the Eagles were famous for, Jackson Browne had a hand in writing, or had a hand in maybe not writing, but Glenn Frey would play it for him. And then Jackson would say, not there yet, or yes, it's there, or it needs this, and then they would fix it, and then it would go on to become what it is. Tequila Sunrise, for example, was a completely different song before Jackson Browne got his hand in it. So, you know, Jackson Browne, look up Jackson Browne.
I'm just disappointed y'all didn't bring up the best fact about Bob Seger. I believe he's a fellow Michigander, is he not?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Ann Arbor,
would you stop
Arbor,
with the Michigan? Would you just stop?
Hey, there's two of us here. I'm connecting. It's Detroit versus everybody. We know this. It's okay. It's okay. Just let's connect, Yvonne. Let's connect.
So, yeah,
I'm
going to
throw a name out that I bet Ian may or may not recognize, and that's Dan Fogerty.
So, it sounds familiar. See, and that's why I was kind of intimidated about this show tonight, because a lot of people don't know. I do like the Doors and the Beatles and stuff like that. But it's some
and
of
it's
the
actually
other...
John Fogerty, not Dan Fogerty.
Yeah, John Fogerty.
Is it John Fogerty? I thought it was Dan.
No, it's John
Fogerty.
But see, I can do that because I'm old.
I'm ready
I can do
to
that.
Play today. Yeah, because he was, I mean, John Fogerty was CCR, essentially.
But then he became a solo artist. Clearwater Revival, okay. I got you.
Yeah,
now.
He was a singer.
It's just
that
CCR, I would have got it.
So, but, you know, even after CCR, you know, he wrote the song Center Field.
Mm.
And if you've ever seen Bull Durham or Major League or any other baseball movie, that song somewhere, you know, put me in, coach, I'm ready to play today. You know, that song is in there. You can't make a baseball movie without putting Center Field by John Fogerty in there. So, you know, I mean, yeah, another iconic songwriter. I mean,
and then
you
have
know,
George
that.
Thorogood.
Oh, yeah. Bad to the Bone.
Bad to the Bone. I need to pull that one out and play it for opening one night. Y'all are not going to believe this, but we're at the 5-minute mark.
Yeah, I just noticed that. Crazy, huh?
It is. How fast it goes.
Well, I got a couple names that I want to throw up before this is over of new artists that I'm going to challenge you guys to look up and discover if you haven't already. The very first name is my friend Matt D., who I'm pretty sure you're familiar with. Matt just released his first major label record called Phantom Locomotive, and it is – Matt's always been the most brilliant songwriter I've ever heard in my life, but this takes Matt to a whole new level. So look up Matt D. or Matt DeRizzo.
and just took up the record. It's called Phantom Locomotive. If Dwight Yoakam, Marty Stewart, and Ray Orbison got together and recorded a record together, it would be Phantom Locomotive.
Okay.
So definitely that one. There is an artist out of Ann Arbor as well. His name is Mayer Hawthorne, M-A-Y-E-R Hawthorne. If you like Motown music, he is a big, tall, white, geeky nerd who has the most authentic Motown sound you will ever hear in your life. Like, you'll swear you were listening to the Temptations again. but then you'll look at Mayer, and Mayer will be like, what is this big, tall, Alfred E. Newman-looking nerd?
Hanging
his butt off, man. Yeah, those two. And then a little heavier aspect, but one I think you'll like is a band called The Lonely Ones. And they used to be Bulbaflex, but Marty's brother retired. Marty took over lead vocals, and now they are a four-piece. And, again, modern rock, but some of the greatest modern rock songs. Again, if you like anything like Creed, or I don't want to say Nickelback, if you like anything like Creed or Seether or any of the modern rock type of stuff, you'll like The Lonely Ones. It's big, bombastic, I don't know a real proper way to kind of put The Lonely Ones over, other than just to say this is four guys who were built to be freaking rock stars, and four of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Again, I can get Marty to come on the show if you'd like, and Marty will have you in stitches. Marty is truly, truly one of the good guys in rock and roll music. So,
well, with that, we're going to have to close, because we are now at the 2-minute mark. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, with my co-host, Ian Bush, and our guest, music guide, Christopher Plain. Yes, we will bring him back. On Monday night, we have Jay Traveler Pelton, Arthur, artist, crafter, you name it. She's a wizard. We are looking for more guests, and I know Chris is going to send me some. He's already given me some wonderful names. So thank you, Chris, for being here. Ian, take it home, honey.
I'm
actually going to pass it off to Chris. Hey, Chris, you got some words of wisdom for us tonight?
Believe in music. I guess that's my words of wisdom, man. Believe in music. Music is really, truly, at your lowest, at your darkest, music can get you through it. There's a song for every mood, every moment, every feeling, whatever it is. Country, rap, hip-hop, jazz, blues, reggae, it doesn't matter. Whatever your taste is, whatever you're feeling, there's always going to be a song. And if you need help with it, if you need a song, look me up. Look up my show, The Noise Report. That noise is with a Z, N-O-N-O-I-Z-E. Just ask. I'll make you a playlist,
And he will, and he'll make a good one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'll make you the most incredible playlist you've ever heard. So you just tell me five bands that you like, and I will make you the most incredible playlist you've ever heard in your life. So.
So on Monday night, join us at 8:00 Eastern Daylight Time with myself, Yvonne Mason, here at Off the Chain, and with my co-host, Ian Bush. And yes, Chris, thank you for being here, and we will bring him back, ladies and gentlemen, because he is the music god, as you all heard tonight, and we will bring his artist on. He is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So
thank
until
you.
Next time, keep playing the music, ladies and gentlemen, because it does soothe the soul. We all know that. Until then, until Monday night, we say good night.